Welcome to the New Zealand Tech Podcast, presented by Paul Spain and guests.
Hi, I'm Paul Spain, and welcome along to the New Zealand Tech Podcast. This is our very first episode for 2013, episode 104. Coming to you this time from Las Vegas, Nevada. We're here for the Consumer Electronics Show, as it used to be known, or International CES is its official name now. So this is an event that's been running in the US for well over 40 years now, but very much the central event as far as the technology industry's concerned in terms of big annual announcements. So there's certainly a big gathering here of technology and consumer electronics companies, over 3,000 in all, who are exhibiting at CES in 2013. Now the first really sort of key event that I find interesting that's associated with CES is Startup Debut. Now, this is an event that brings together a handful of new startup companies that are generally tech related. Some of them aren't absolutely brand new, but they tend to be at various early stages in their launch processes. And on this episode, we're gonna have a bit of a chat with some of those startups that are out to tout themselves and what they're doing here at CES and at the Startup Debut event. So first up, I'm going to jump in. We're going to talk to a company called Focus at Will. Now this is quite an interesting firm. Their technology is all around using music to help people focus and to work better. So whether that's studying or just working at your job. So let's jump in and we'll have a chat with the founder.
Right now I'm at Startup Debut with Will Henschel. Will, you've got a new software-based product here. It's going into beta here in the US. Tell me a little bit about that and where it fits in.
So focusatwill.com is the website. This is a web-accessed application, so there's nothing to install. The system is a new kind of music service, which is aimed specifically to give you productivity on demand. So it's a focus enhancement, cognitive enhancement business. And so we found that two people out of three like to listen to music while they work, while they study, while they write, or while they read. But we found that it's very difficult to find music that's suitable. In fact, the chances are, if you are one of the two people out of three that like to listen to music while you work, study, and so on, you're listening to the wrong music, and it's actually more distracting to you than helping. And the reason why, if you think about it, is that of all the music that's out there, most of it is designed to be actively listened to. That's the idea. Hmm. So we found that by playing music that is instrumental only, music that is largely unknown to you, and music that is played in very specific sequences, we're able to extend the typical productivity cycle. At the moment, if you're just sitting down to try and work on something, you could probably work for 20 or 30 minutes. Some people, 20 minutes, depends on the time of day and how tired you are. But with our system, we've found ways to consistently sustain the time that you're able to focus and concentrate from about 20 to 30 minutes to about 100 minutes.
Wow, that's pretty cool. Now, does the music that you use, will that vary sort of on a per-person type basis? How do you know how effective it is? Or have you just tested a broad lot of music on individuals and you know that, you know, particular types will have a good impact on anybody's working?
The system is based on how your limbic system reacts to stimulus. And this is pretty consistent across all people. So the limbic system is the part of the brain that's at the back of the root of the brain, sometimes known as the reptile brain or the evolutionary fight or flight mechanism. And that is the system in your brain, the part of your brain that is always looking out for danger. It's looking for fight or flight. It's looking for food, danger, sex, not necessarily in that order, by the way. Mm. And so we found by playing very specific kinds of music in as I said, it's the selection of music, but it's the temporal sequencing of the music that really makes a difference. And it works pretty much the same for all people. It's a human thing. different genres of music work better for different kinds of people. But if you like, for instance, if you like jazz music, there's a jazz channel on our system.
Right,
you can
right.
See
so
here.
You can.
But
you can
it's a good idea not to listen to jazz. Here's right. The weird thing.
Okay.
Because if you listen to jazz music, it's going to be triggering familiarity. It's going right. To be triggering memory. And it's actually going to be distracting to you.
Right.
So the secret of the system is to actually play music which you would never normally listen to.
And what if you come across something you really like? Will it tell you what you're listening to and you can...
So the idea of the system is to play your music that you never hear.
Okay.
And if you notice a piece of music, the idea is to actually get into the system and to skip it.
Right. Oh,
the idea is to... It's the opposite of any other internet radio station. We want you to listen to this... Actually, we want you to hear this, not to listen to this. Mm. We want you to hear this for about 100 minutes and just get stuff done. So it's a totally new kind of music.
That's fascinating. And what sort of feedback have you had from beta testers so far, or is it just going into beta right now?
We launched about a week ago.
Okay.
And we're already in exponential growth. We have in the last week, here we are at the CES, the second week in January 2013. We are already at many, many thousands of people using the system. And the feedback has been extraordinarily positive. At the moment, the beta is not available outside of the USA. But when we launch in the second quarter, we will be worldwide.
Okay. And how will people pay to use the service? How does that work?
The service is... it's a free service for most. It's a limited. At the moment, the whole system is free. Mm. But we have an additional layer of premium channels that have additional functionality in terms of how effective they are for focus. So there'll be a subscription model. It'll still be a very affordable number, though. About the same as maybe as Pandora or one of those other radio stations.
Okay. Oh, that sounds cool. Well, thank you very much, Will.
It's a total pleasure, Paul.
Cheers.
Good luck, mate.
All right, well, some interesting stuff there. Next up is an interesting startup, Simul TV. So let's jump right into that.
Okay, right now I'm with...
Stephen Turner, the CEO and founder of Simul TV.
Right, now we've just been having a look at Simul TV. Now this is a brand new product, you're just releasing it into the market today.
That's correct.
Tell us a little bit about what it does. It sort of has, I guess, two functions to it.
Yes, we broadcast live television around the world over any operating system, over any device, in HD below 60% less bandwidth than any other player, but we allow you to also do a picture-in-picture video chat with multiple people so you can share your experience no matter where they are in the world. You can connect with family and friends.
Great. Now, the channels that you have available at the moment, these are deals that you've signed with individual channels.
That's
you're going to be adding to that over time. That's how it works?
That is correct, yes.
So at the moment, for instance, when you have launched, you've launched with a number of U.S. channels?
Yes, that's correct. During the month of January, we're allowing everybody to participate in this for free, so there's a limited number of channels. But as February comes around, we will charge a subscription base of about $10 U.S., and you'll get roughly around 40 live American channels and 5,000 video on demand titles.
Oh, that's cool. Now, in the future, are we likely to see this sort of come to other markets with local broadcasts from, you know, for instance, New Zealand, Australia, and other markets? Is that
Most
sort
definitely.
Of thing you're working on?
Most definitely. I'm in negotiations right now with broadcasters from around the world, and I'm hoping to line up the best content from different markets so we can showcase what every market has to the rest of the world.
And are these mostly sort of free-to-air type channels that you're going to pick up and then sort of consolidate all that together into this online sort of mechanism?
Not necessarily. We're very interested in family-friendly content, and we're trying to pick out what I call the diamonds in the rough that are channels that no one really knows outside their market description but are the world's best channels, and I believe that the world has an interest in them. They may be free-to-air, they may be, you know, some of the more popular channels.
Okay. That's interesting. Now, so what we're looking at here on the screen, this is web based. We've got the TV picture, which isn't filling up the screen because surrounding it is that room for sort of chat with friends and so on. But you can also flick into a full screen mode.
Yes, you can. You can take it into a full screen mode, and then the picture in pictures become customizable, where you can reshape and resize them and move them around the screen to customize your viewing experience.
So with the picture-in-picture idea, tell us a little bit about what your thoughts are of how that's going to get utilized.
Well, it can be utilized in a variety of ways. Imagine any social event like sporting events and or any kind of family movies. You can upload your own family movies to this and share it with family and friends that are outside your living area. Or you can have sporting events or dramas that you want to share a movie with friends and family that may not live near you, but you want to watch a movie together or watch a sporting event to where you can talk about what's going on in the show while it's live or on demand.
Okay, that's interesting. All right, well, thanks for showing us that. And, all the best with your launch.
I appreciate it. My pleasure.
Hope you enjoyed that one. Now, next up, we talk with List Sanity. Cool little product. Let's jump in.
I'm right here with Troy Evans from List Sanity, and we're going to hear a little bit about this web-based tool. Tell us, give us a run-through.
Thank you. So Listsanity is basically a social discovery platform for creating and sharing lists. So basically what we've done is try to fill in the void that's left by Facebook and Twitter because they're not really made for making lists. And right now, you can find lists all over the internet, but that's the problem. They're all over the internet. They're not in one place. So this is a spot where you can go and create your own list and send it out to your friends, and hopefully your list is extremely popular and thousands of people want to do it. So, best movie of all time, maybe you got an opinion, maybe somebody else has a different one. Let's see what is number one after 1,000 people do it. Or favorite places to go before I die, favorite type of food, best Girl Scout cookie, favorite city in the world, whatever it is, we've got thousands of lists and you can create your own and send it out and get the aggregate.
Okay, cool. So here I am in Las Vegas at the moment. I could bring up a list of best places to eat,
right?
All those and sorts of things. I make my own lists of the sort of highlights of things to do here.
Correct. So for instance, best places to get a burger in Vegas is on the list. So maybe you're here and you want to find out what that place is. So it's a research tool. But perhaps you really like sushi and we don't have that list created yet, and you know of a great sushi spot. Well, you put on there best place to get sushi in Las Vegas, number one is this,
right?
You know, and that's what you do. And then as other people
and
see that list,
these are social lists. Correct. So everyone sort of contributes,
right? And then it'll add, so I'll always be able to see what your list is, but then I'll also be able to see what the aggregate is once everybody does it,
right?
Because
okay.
You know, maybe I want to know what the general public is, but maybe I really want to know what yours is because I trust your opinion more.
Okay. So I'm looking here. On the screen, we've got cities I love, best movies of all time, places to go before I die, etc.
It's never ending.
Right. So it's just these
thousands of lists on here.
Yeah.
So let's click on places to go before I die. The aggregate. After this is our beta, so we've got 50 people that's done this list. Egypt is coming out number one.
Okay.
But I chose Dubai, and Sydney is my number two.
Where's Auckland? Where's Christchurch, Wellington?
So here's what you got to do.
Where's Invercargill?
You got to go do this list and let me know that I'm supposed to go travel to those places and make a convincing argument for it, because if it comes in number one on enough people's list, I'm going to go there.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
And you can always leave a... So we have Melody here who did a list, places to go before she dies, but she just didn't put South Africa. She said because she wants to go on a safari.
Okay.
So you can put the comments on there. But what's most interesting about it is if you go to a profile page, you're going to find out all about the persons who you're looking at. So right now on Twitter or Facebook, the information flows away with time because it's a news feed. But I've done 452 lists so far.
Whoa,
I guarantee
you'll
know more about me than my wife does if you read this profile page, right? So after you start doing, 10, 20, 30 lists yourself, somebody can look up and find out what your preferences are or what you have a strong opinion about. You know, because if you took the time to do a list, you obviously got an opinion about it.
Okay. Oh, that's really cool. Oh, you get a list of favorite startups.
There's all sorts
of things in there.
So we got List Sanity on there. We've got a lot of companies that are in Las Vegas and the tech community.
Yeah, so we recognize some of those.
We have Alu. and yep. U-Challenge and Demo Vegas and Ticket Cake and stuff like that. Mm. Those are all companies that are on the favorite startup list on Listsanity.
Yeah, we spoke to some of these guys here last year. Okay, that's really cool.
So I'd be interested in knowing what's going on in that part of the world and seeing what list. So when I come to Australia, the places I should eat, I need to see a list of best places to eat in Sydney.
Yeah,
or
I don't
New
know
Zealand.
About Australia, but right? New Zealand, I can tell you, man.
Okay,
hey,
well,
best
way to see the islands in New Zealand or what have you, right?
Yeah. Now, are you in beta at the moment? Is it an open beta? Can
it's
anyone
an open
jump
beta.
On board?
Anyone can jump on. All you need is a Facebook account because we connect through Facebook.
Okay.
And anybody can use it. We want as many people using it as possible so that we can know what works best and how we can improve the product.
Excellent. All right. Well, good luck with Listsanity, and great to meet you, Troy.
Thank you very much, Paul.
Cheers.
All right.
All right. So that was Listsanity. Next up, we talk with a company that wants to help online media outlets to charge for access to their content. This company is MediaPass.
So right now I'm looking at a product called MediaPass. I'm with Matt Mitchell, co-founder and CEO. Matt, tell us a little bit about MediaPass and just what it does.
Well, we built an easy way that any web publisher can have a subscription model on their website really in a matter of minutes, and it would work as well as the New York Times has on their website, only instead of spending $40 million building the subscription paywall technology, you'd have it for free and you'd be up and running in 10 minutes with just one line of code.
Wow,
no programming needed at all.
Now, this seems to be quite a big swing for the media. It seems that a lot of publishers have decided that it's very, very hard for them to actually cover all of their costs, to pay their reporters and so on, by just making everything available for free. So we're starting to see this more and more. New Zealand, we've got the National Business Review, which is probably the most notable one that's made this move.
Yep.
Obviously, internationally, New York Times and the like. How are you seeing adoption of this, or is this still fairly early on for you guys? When did you launch?
Well, you're right. There's a lot been going on in this space, and the world is going this direction. And we built this product a few years ago because we had a unique perspective, having built a subscription business online, that people will pay for content. So having known that, we knew that the world would go this direction eventually. And we were really happy when the New York Times did it. We wish we would have got to them earlier so we could have helped them. But this is where the world is going. And it's not just for the New York Times and the Wall Street Journals of the world. Yeah, they'll have a million subscribers and their revenue will be astronomical. But it also works for bloggers that have 100,000 unique visitors. Some of them actually have higher conversion rates than the New York Times even sees, because they have such a loyal audience for that niche content that they have that they get a lot of them to subscribe.
Interesting.
And like you said, the world really is going this direction, and it just makes sense. It always out-yields almost any form of advertising asking to pay for some content.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, what's your monetization model? Do you make a sort of a percentage of the revenue that's generated when people pay for content?
Right. So we don't take anything up front, mainly because we know there's still apprehension in the market about trying this sort of thing. Not everybody is sold on it. So we want them to try it really easily. And so we made it easy to get started in 10 minutes, and we didn't charge anything up front because we wanted them to say, well, why not? Why wouldn't I try this? It's so easy and it doesn't cost me anything. Let MediaPass prove it to me. And so we just take a minority of the subscription revenue.
Okay. Oh, that's cool. Hey, thanks for sharing that. I guess a lot of our listeners are hoping that this isn't a success and that nobody charges for their content. but I know we've also got some publishers listening that will be very interested. So, thank you very much, Matt.
Great. If any of them are interested, they can find us at MediaPass.com.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Right now we jump in with a chat with Ken Johnson from Zephyr Games.
So right now I'm with Ken Johnson from Zephyr Games. Now, Ken, you've just launched this new game, the Legend of Fat Ninja.
Yes.
Now, tell us about how this came about.
Okay, so Legend of Fat Ninja came about. My team and I were thinking we'd really love to make our own game internally. We'd been working on preschool games and other things for years. And over discussions, we said, wouldn't it be great if we could just have a game about a fat ninja? And then we were discussing, what do we want to do with it? And we thought, okay, maybe a physics game, you throw the fat ninja like a cannonball. And many discussions and, good times later, we came up with Legend of Fat Ninja. And Legend of Fat Ninja kind of combines the best of Angry Birds, a physics launcher, with a pinball game where it's more points-based, points-oriented, and goal-oriented.
Cool. Now, you mentioned something about Kickstarter before. Tell us where that fits in.
Sure. You know, our first idea was to do a proof of the game. But once we got that done, we said, wouldn't it be great if we could really expand this into more levels, more good times? And Kickstarter came up as a really good way to do that. You know, we'd do that, we'd reach out to the community, get people involved. So we started a Kickstarter, I believe in July it was. And it was a big learning experience. I can only say it's a lot of work, but it was really rewarding to work with people.
Cool. So you raised funding through Kickstarter to help you sort of really get this fully launched. Now you've done the first sort of phase of your launch. You've got an Android version of this app launched through the Amazon store. Is that right?
Yes. At this point, we've launched on iOS.
Okay.
And we've launched on the Amazon App Store.
Okay.
And we're coming out on Google Play later this month.
Yep.
And then our first big expansion of the gameplay, which will be downloadable characters or new playable characters, is also going to be coming out before February.
Okay. Oh, that's cool. And what are the other sorts of games and software that you've been producing? I know this is sort of your first sort of your own commercial game, but you've been doing projects for other clients. Tell us a little bit about that sort of work.
Certainly, yeah. Legend of Fat Ninja is certainly our baby and our internal product, but we've also been doing some great client games that we publish as well. We're very well known in the educational space. Math Evolve is a great one that's come out recently. Also Kinderbach, which teaches early learning piano skills and music skills. And then if you look at us on the preschool side of things, we also have Kiwi and Pear, which is a fantastic brand about two adventurous monkeys that travel the world. And we also have some great learning books as well.
Nice. All right. Oh, thank you for that. That's really cool.
No, my pleasure.
Cheers.
And one of the last companies that we got a chance to talk with at startup debut is Channel, we'll jump in with one of the founders there with John Wander.
Right now, I'm at startup debut, and I'm with John Wander from Channel. Now, John, tell us a little bit about this. Now, there's a bit of background here. Channel, you have some of your investment is out of New Zealand. Is that right?
Yes, that's right. That's right. And it was, I don't want to say by accident, but it was just by luck, I guess, that we were, I was there, I was brought out to New Zealand because I work with a lot of startups. I've been an angel investor and had a seed VC fund. And so I was brought to New Zealand by the New Zealand government to work with some of the incubators like Ice House and I believe it's Creative HQ down in Wellington, and with Tech NZ to work with and mentor startups and really coach them and how they could position their product and reach a larger market. And it was during that trip, which was my first trip. I've been there four times now. I've been back to speak at a few conferences.
Well, it's something that's very good because in New Zealand, often we don't always have that perspective on the broader picture for what's involved to get businesses off the ground, to think globally, to think about getting funding. So it's always good to have sort of a bit of outside influence to come in and help with that from time to time.
Yeah, that's right. And for me coming in and why I've been back four times is what I learned about New Zealand is there's incredible brain power and talent coming out of New Zealand. Companies that could be global sensations that just need a bridge to get over to larger markets, obviously Australia, China, United States. And so that was really what that, and really proud of the New Zealand government for actually spending the money and taking the initiative to bring, I was part of a team of VCs and angels and entrepreneurs to help coach. And since that trip, we've seen a group of angel investors, Simon Holdsworth, Rod Drury, Stephen Tindall, and a few others get together and actually set up what's called a Kiwi landing pad, both in LA and in San Francisco. So giving New Zealand startups a place to land and get set up as they try to reach a larger market. So I've been kind of, I saw that whole thing happening. But anyways, along the way during that trip is I did meet who's one of the super angels in New Zealand, Simon Holdsworth, Simon spends a lot, went to school in the States, spends a lot of time in the States, and has investments in the States. And so on one of his trips to Los Angeles, which is where Channel is based, I invited him in to come meet the team, and he spent a couple days with us and got really excited about what we were doing and is now one of our key investors.
Well, that's really cool. So, well, it certainly is, as I've sort of gone around startup debut here, you know, Channel was one of the products that sort of really stood out to me as having a lot of potential.
Great. Good to hear.
You know, it's quietly probably, you know, right up there at the top. But, you know, obviously there are a lot of hoops to jump through to get from being a startup to where you're actually generating a whole bunch of revenue.
Yeah.
But maybe you can just sort of run us through the highlights of Channel. Now, the URL is chnl.it, is that right?
Yeah, that's correct, chnl.it. We are in public beta, which means it's available for anyone to sign up now.
Okay, you've been in public beta for about a couple of months or something.
Almost 60 days.
Yeah, so okay.
Pretty fresh out of the gate.
Yeah.
You know, so far it's been great. You know, we've been getting a lot of great feedback and testimonial about people really loving the product. We initially launched where we were pulling in content from your social networks.
So you're sort of a social browser, I heard it referred to. What's your word? Because it's an in-browser-based app.
Ultimately, our mission is to become your content browser across the web. We're initially a social content browser because we, out of the gate, started pulling in content from your social networks. So we pull in content from people you follow on Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, SoundCloud, YouTube, Tumblr, Instagram, and Flickr.
Yeah, that's pretty handy. So you don't have to go to those individual sites. You're getting all the content together in one place. And to me, it was a lot more... you browse a lot more information than you would on, for instance, you know, Flipboard, something like that. It's you know, it's something that makes much better use of the real estate, and it's got a bunch more features, right?
Yeah,
like
just
for instance, being able to, you know, save your sort of, you know, bits and pieces, because often you're flicking through social media, something's quite cool, but you know, often they're on different channels. So being able to save it, I thought was yeah. You know, just it's maybe an obvious feature, but being able to save things from across all of those social networks and sources is great.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things, I mean, so we, you know, we've been around, we're not new to the web. I mean, all of us, the four of us that work at Channel, have been around the web for about 12 years, and we worked at web companies that did a lot of digital distribution for music. So Ingrooves, Topspin. I was also one of the seed investors in Filterbox and went on their board, and that was in the first sort of stab, if you will, at filtering and searching across blogs and social media to bring in relevant information being said about yourself or your brand or whatever topic. And that was ultimately sold to Jive Software, which went public last December. And so, you know, we're no strangers to the web, but what we really saw happening, why we built Channel, was there's a fragmentation problem of media spread across the web. There's a lot of great content, but it's in too many places. I don't want to have to go to SoundCloud and YouTube and Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. It would be easier if I could just pull all of that into one channel, be able to filter that, meaning maybe I just want to look at my videos. Well, with Channel, you can look at your videos across all your social networks, or you can look at your audio across just one network or all your social networks. You can filter by media type. You can filter by social networks. But what's really cool about it is you can engage with the content. So if I pull in a piece of content that's been posted from Facebook and I click on that piece of content, I can either comment, like, or if it's been shared across Twitter and other social networks, I'll see how many times and by who that piece of content has been shared. So it gives me a lot of really valuable information as to really what's trending, not across just my Facebook or my Twitter. I can see what content is trending across all my social networks. So that's just step one. Step two, we're adding Pinterest next week. We just added deals. So we got a lot of feedback from customers saying, or our users saying, you know, it'd be really cool if you could pull in like my daily deals from like Groupon and Living Social and Gilt and others. We just added Groupon and Living Social. So now we can pull in like deals from places that you normally shop from. Well, ultimately where we're going with this is become the content browser. Soon you'll be able to follow RSS feeds from websites in the channel.
Yeah.
Your Google Reader, that's coming soon.
Great.
So the idea is to be able to consume all of my content from wherever it's coming from, social networks, websites, wherever, be able to filter that, share that back out, and then be able to actually create my own channel. So I could take a Mashable feed or a TechCrunch feed or maybe a feed from Robert Scoble or some other tech blogger, and I could create a tech channel, a tech news channel.
Sure, okay.
What's relevant to me? My news channel is going to be different from your news channel. So ultimately, it's going to be a real powerful curation platform that will be available for my friends to see. So you could follow my channels, and I could follow your channels. That's coming in about the second quarter. So I'm giving you some forward-thinking information. But we want to become this content-centric browser and network for the web. If it's a status update that comes off Facebook, or if it's we think there's a lot of white noise on social networks, we're trying to eliminate the noise and rise above that and just pull in content.
Yeah, because it's all content. So all the little loose comments and so on are cleared out, and it really only covers the tweets that link to some real content or a Facebook post that links to some real content, etc.
Right.
That's
what we're all about.
Yeah.
So we're trying to really. You know, that's what we stand for. We're not trying to replace Facebook. We're not trying to replace other social networks. We're trying to just pull the content and bring it to you. So when you want to go back and engage with that piece of content, we'll take you back to Facebook or wherever the source of that content came from. But as you mentioned earlier, the powerful thing about channel is it saves you so much time because you can scan through large amounts of content and a very fast rate. So we save you time and we reduce your noise and ultimately give you the content you want and easily allow you to share that out and engage.
Cool. So no, that looks good. Well, I'll definitely be signing up. So it's
chnl.it.
Okay, yeah. We'll be having a look at that, and certainly look forward to any feedback from listeners that give it a try too. So it's in beta at the moment, and you're just going to keep developing that. Your business model, you're sort of focused around. You don't have a subscription model, do you? It's free, but there'll be some
totally
sort of
free,
sponsored posts or something.
What we're not going to do is start clogging the channel with a bunch of ads. What we will do is because we can pull some really relevant information about users and what they like, is we will serve them up in what's called a sponsored channel. So they'll opt in and they can see stuff that's offers, whether it's travel or products that are based on content that they're viewing. So it's an opt-in. It's not like ruining the user experience of the channel. And obviously there's some analytics, you know, features that we think we can monetize. We have some premium apps and some power user features that are coming that we'll be able to monetize. And then we're also going to do social facing brand pages, or individuals. And so you'll be able to embed that channel in your website or anywhere you want.
Okay.
And we'll probably monetize those for $5 a month, something like that.
Sounds interesting. So, all right. Well, thank you very much
for
your time.
Welcome all the Kiwi users. We're
and
very fond of New Zealand.
It's great to great to come across something here in Vegas that has a New Zealand connection with that some New Zealand investments. So that's really cool.
Yeah.
And I guess especially pleasing that it appears to be a pretty sound investment compared to I guess some of the other startups.
Yeah.
So it's good to see. I certainly hope that it pays off and brings a little bit of extra funds back to New Zealand anyway.
Yeah, so do we.
Good luck with that.
Yeah,
cheers.
Thanks, Paul.
And finally for this episode, we talk with Leonardo. This is a very immersive, interactive 3D virtual reality startup. Quite fascinating. Let's jump in and have a chat with them.
Okay, right now I'm with Roland Manyai from a company called Leonardo. Now, there's another way to pronounce that, and if we look at the your domain name, you can probably spell that out for us.
It's Leonardo 3DO, and you can guess what this is all about.
Yeah, so you guys are doing sort of a 3D virtual reality. It's a little bit hard to describe what you do, but having a play with your product, I had some 3D glasses on. There were some various cameras and so on set up on the screen that were able to sort of track my head movements, and as I moved around, what I saw changed. And then you've got this other product, I think you call it the Bird, where you're able to control what goes on in that space. Can you maybe describe that a little bit better for our listeners?
Oh yes, 3D visualization has been around. Just think of the 3D movies, right? Interaction has been
around. We make a few of them in New Zealand. You might have heard of one or two.
Yeah, so, but the interaction part.
Sure.
And if you put these two things together, the 3D vision and the interaction, gives you a virtual space work environment, which means that you can not only see the 3D objects, but you can really interact with them in the virtual space. So you, wherever you see, you can touch, feel, interact, modify the 3D objects. You can do whatever you want in just the space in front of you.
Yeah, so what we played with before on the software that you had set up, we used your controller. You're calling it the Bird, is that right?
We call it a Bird. Think about that. You try to do something in 3D in a virtual space environment with a 2D mouse. Does it make any sense? It's insane. We don't even notice it. So therefore, we provide a 3D mouse, which we call it a Bird, with which you can just use it as a mouse, just in space, in the space in front of you.
It was very, very easy to use, I got to say. Just, you know, move it around and no problem at all. It took, you know, there wasn't any learning curve or learning time, right?
That's right. And the most fun part of it that we are just launching another 3D mouse, which is your smartphone. So you can just download an application and your smartphone becomes a 3D mouse. And it's going to be, you know, it's going to be free. So it's going to be fun too.
That's accessible.
Yeah.
Right. So as long as you've got a smartphone that has all those sensors and so on, it can,
yeah,
can work.
Yeah, 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 yeah. It works very well. And if you want to get the pro version for professionals, for more sophisticated tools that you want to use, then you go with our Bird and you buy the whole hardware set and you will have a full professional virtual reality environment.
Cool. Now, what we played with was sort of a three-dimensional sort of sculpting type app, and we were able to move around and interact with that. What's sort of the potential for where you expect this to go? What's your business model?
This application that you've seen, it's for 3D designers. So this is the easiest way to do sculpting or modeling. So you don't need, you know, month of learning of any sophisticated 3D design software. You just plug it in and install it and start using it. But this is just one application. We have an open SDK, open source SDK, which means that you can develop any kind of applications based on that. We have some demo games. This technology is also used in the medical industry. It is used for facial reconstruction design. It is used also for welding simulation training. So there are many, many different applications. We are now trying to find those industries who would benefit the most out of it.
Yeah, oh, it's very cool. Now, with the, for instance, the 3D sort of sculpting app, could you then take those and output that sort of stuff to a 3D printer, for instance?
Absolutely. This is one of the things which is very, even today already, it's appreciated very much by the users.
Oh, very cool. Well, great to talk to you. If anyone wants to find out a little bit more, you're at www.leonar3do.com. That's great. Thank you for your time, Roland. Enjoyed having a look at your technology there. It's great.
Thank you very much, Paul.
Well, that's it. That's our wrap up from Startup Debut. We will be covering a range of content during CES 2013 here in Las Vegas. So hope you'll keep connected with NZ Tech Podcast, listening to some of the other interviews that we've got coming together this week. And hey, thanks everyone for listening in. You can, of course, catch us online, nztechpodcast.com. We're on Twitter, of course, at nztechpodcast and facebook.com/nztechpodcast. And you can also follow me directly on Twitter, and my handle is just at Paul Spain. So thanks everyone for listening, and we will catch you very soon on the next episode of the New Zealand Tech Podcast. See ya.